website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To get copies of today's program with Chris Hedges and for his book, The Greatest Evil is War, just call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Special thanks to the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Joe Rich is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. This is a legal ID. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and I am Dr. Demento, just barely legal.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
K-B-O-O
Portland. Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, should the AP out the administration source of their fake and faulty news story that the Russians were targeting Poland, nearly misleading the world into a direct conflagration between Russia, NATO, and the U.S. Also, fighting the toxic tides caused by the U.S. military in Hawaii, and Title 42 remains in place despite a federal court order. All this coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We are live today in San Francisco and Los Angeles, and we are happy to have you along. And first up, we're going to go back to the story reported by AP based on administration officials that the Russians had essentially killed some folks with a missile in Poland. A lot has happened, and we want to welcome back to these airwaves Sam Husseini, who has written an important piece about this. Why is AP still protecting the source behind its false Russia bombed Poland story? Incredibly important story. And joining us is Sam Husseini. Sam, welcome back to Flashpoints. I know this story is also going to be featured at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting in their newsletter, and people can find it there. But there was an incredible story that developed on Tuesday. The AP cited U.S. intelligence source that a Russian missile had hit Poland, a NATO member. This is obviously a profound and serious possibility in terms of the expanding the war to a place where nobody wants to imagine. So let's walk us through what happened. We now know that the story is a little bit different than it was initially portrayed by AP. So walk us through it. Sam? Sam, you got to turn on your mic. Sam?
Hi. Hi, Dennis.
All right. Okay. Can you hear me now, Sam?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. Let's walk through the story, if you could. We read a little introduction. I don't know if you heard it, but walk us through the story.
Absolutely. So what happened was you had AP put out a story saying that a Russian missile hit Poland. This couldn't have been more significant because, of course, NATO is a Poland is a NATO member, and you immediately had people clamoring for Article 4 or Article 5. These are provisions under NATO that some people interpret as mandating a war, and an attack on one is an attack on all, and therefore, if Poland, a NATO member, is struck by a non-NATO member, Russia, then that could precipitate a wider war. The AP ran with a single source in violation of their own rules that wasn't even byline. Their own rules say that a single that you can only use an anonymous source if they're reliable, and B, if it's not speculative, and that it has to be bylined. They didn't do any of those things. They ran a single sentence story saying a senior U.S. official says that it was a Russian missile that hit Poland. And the ramifications of that were kind of predictable. You had a whole series of other media outlets pick this up, from MSNBC to CNBC to CBS to so on, and they were all framing it as Russia attacked Poland. The AP, and then you had the Polish government clamoring for a meeting. Biden convened an emergency meeting at the G7. The Washington Post put out a story on the NATO charter possibly provoking war. Zelensky would further push for U.S. intervention as a result of this, claiming that he has no doubt that it was not our rocket. There was pushback, and there were people pointing out evidence that indeed it was a Ukrainian missile that hit Poland. Eventually the U.S. government, Biden, the following day, said indeed the evidence was that it was a Ukrainian missile.
He would certainly know, because it was a Biden administration official who apparently released the information. So I guess the president somehow would be able to have access to that kind of information.
One would think so, but we don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, you could have factions within the administration. It was designated. He was ID'd by the AP as a senior intelligence official, not a White House official. So he could be somebody in the CIA who's clamoring for war, maybe the Biden administration doesn't want that or isn't ready for a wider war or whatever it is.
It could also be somebody, an advisor in the Defense Department is also an advisor for one weapons company or another. And every time you get a little shot like this, there's another $10, $20, $30 billion of weapons on the way. And they've been talking about new weapons all day today. They've been talking about it ever since this fake story has been coming out. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Not at all.
There are many ramifications for a false story like this.
Absolutely. So this all happened on Tuesday. On Wednesday morning, I contacted the AP, and finally, by the end of day Wednesday, they got back to me. They didn't answer any of my questions, but they just pointed me to a correction that they had issued, which basically said, we made a mistake. We relied on this senior intelligence official, giving him anonymity, that it was a Russian missile, and that proved to be wrong. It was actually a Ukrainian missile acting allegedly in defense against a Russian attack. So now AP is saying it's a false story. So my question to them is, what about this source? Okay, you have granted this source anonymity, an incredible power. He gets to say whatever he wants, and he's not held accountable. We don't know their name. We don't know his name. We don't know his agency. Oh, I presume it's a him. Why are you doing that? Why are you at this point granting this person anonymity? You only grant anonymity, you say, to people who are reliable. It would seem that this person has proven that they are not reliable. So shouldn't you rescind the anonymity and name the source? This is really important because the way that things are set up now, they can, you know, the source can hide behind his anonymous quotes, and the media outlet can hide behind their anonymous source, and effectively no one is held genuinely accountable. AP just seems to want to sweep this under the rug with a correction saying, oops, we got this wrong. Let's move on to the next subject. And I'm saying, no, you can't move on to the next subject. We want to know what happened here. Who was the source? Why wouldn't you out him so that he can go and do the same thing again next week? No, this is unacceptable. The very structure of how they're using anonymous sources here is almost an incentive for disinformation. Now, maybe there was an honest mistake here. I kind of doubt it because he's a senior intelligence official, so surely he would know what the ramifications were of saying that Russia struck Poland. It's possible, but it's difficult to attribute it to an honest mistake. But in any case, AP has to give some kind of rationale for why they will not name this individual. To not do that at this point is basically asking for a repeat.
Absolutely. We are speaking with Sam Husseini. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. He's got a story out about the false claims made by the Associated Press. And you're saying that the source remains anonymous? Not just the source. And what's the journalist saying?
The journalist won't talk to me. I had to go through the AP's communications, media relations people. And they just pointed me to the correction that they put out, and they wouldn't answer any of my questions.
Okay, who wrote the story?
Well, there were several versions of it. If you go to the link, it only goes to the correction now. You have to, if you go to my page, you'll see that it was John Leicester and James Lapora were some of the bylines. The most egregious of the stories, which was just a one-sentence story, which got massive pickup on Twitter, was just had one sentence with no byline. A senior U.S. intelligence official says Russian missiles crossed into NATO member Poland, killing two people. That's the entire story that got all over Twitter on Tuesday and that made Twitter trend World War III. So those are some of the names. I have not been able to get any comment from any AP reporter. I just simply got their corporate people to give me this correction. And that's simply not good enough. They have to answer for the substance here. This is this is just having a loaded gun lying around the house. And I've written about this before. I wrote a piece
What do you mean by that? Explain a little bit more about that. What do you mean by that?
I wrote a piece for FAIR, the Media Watch group, back in 2017. There was another case where CNN put out a story claiming that multiple people were the anonymous sources, and it ended up being a false story. It was relating to Russiagate, and they retracted it. So I put out a story saying this is a wider problem. It's like having a loaded gun lying around the house, it's a a total non-accountability thing. The solution for a falsifying source is to unmask the source so we get accountable speech. And there are predecessors to this. I mean, part of what motivated me to write that story in 2017 was things like, this is how the Iraq WMD story took off. You had Judith Miller of the New York Times quoting administration officials saying that U.S. scientists were convinced that Iraq was trying to obtain aluminum tubes and their only possible purpose was for a nuclear weapons program. We later found out that's not what the scientists thought at all. The Bush-Cheney officials, probably Scooter Libby, fed that story to Judy Miller, got it into the New York Times. It was complete baloney. It was an anonymous source. And that was a huge part of the case for the Iraq War. They put that out in September of 2020, shortly before Congress voted to authorize the invasion of Iraq. So you have the mechanisms here of a falsifying narrative. Now, there is one really good example that's a good case of when a media outlet turned on a source. And that's the Jeffrey Wigand story. If people saw the film The Insider, where 60 Minutes took on Big Tobacco, and part of that story was how Big Tobacco went after Jeffrey Wigand, a whistleblower, so they were trying to smear him, and they fed information to the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal really looked at it, decided it was baloney, and turned on their own source in Big Tobacco and blew the whistle on it. And that's in large part why you had Big Tobacco unravel, as they have in some respects, at least. Some measure of corporate accountability was achieved in large part because the media wouldn't allow Big Tobacco to have the power of being an anonymous source feeding them false information. The ramifications of that power are profound. So my question is, what world do we want to live in? Do we want to live in a world where falsifying sources get away with lies, or do we want a world where we get some measure of accountability? And this is a critical case. The stakes here could not have been higher. You even had outlets like Responsible Statecraft, the Quincy Institute, fairly mainstream DC big think tank now, and they were running a story saying AP almost triggered World War III here. So it's not neither they nor anybody else who I've seen criticize this are calling for the next step. People are just blaming AP. I'm like, yeah, fine, blame AP. Absolutely, they shouldn't have run with this story. But now what do? We get them to out the source. If we do that, then this stops this conveyor belt of lies.
It's amazing. And I think about particularly MSNBC, which has really become the perfect stenographer, particularly when it comes to foreign policy for the Biden administration. Nicole Wallace does 2 hours every day in the middle of the day. Nicole Wallace, who was communications director for Bush 2, I believe. And the sort of holier than thou that we don't lie and they do. We know, Sam, as journalists, all governments lie sometimes and some more than others. And when it comes to war and peace, we have seen this story before. You want to sort of give it a bit more of historical context? We have a little extra time here. So why don't you give it a little more context, if you would?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, it's really good that you point to MSNBC. Kyle Griffin, who's the executive producer for two of MSNBC's shows, Mehdi Hassan and Ayman's shows, he was out there, you know, totally flogging this AP thing, getting, you know, thousands upon thousands of retweets. So that, you know, I wasn't watching MSNBC on Tuesday when it happened, but it was evident on Twitter what was probably going on air there because of what was happening on Twitter. There have been other cases like this. For example, after the people might remember the anthrax attacks in 2001, the U.S. You know, after 9/11, you had the anthrax attacks, where anthrax letters were sent to members of Congress as well as some members of the media, and it effectively helped set the atmosphere for getting the Patriot Act, the so-called Patriot Act, through Congress, as well as launching the first of the forever wars, the invasion of Afghanistan. They put out a story, these were a false flag attack. They had, you know, death to America, death to Israel, praise to Allah written on them in the letters with this anthrax. A ton of media immediately, of course, fingered Arabs and Muslims as the culprits in the atmosphere after 9/11. And you had Brian Ross of ABC say that the expert analysis of the anthrax pointed to Iraq, and he cited an anonymous U.S. government official. That ended up being a complete lie, and NBC walked, you know, ABC walked back the story and everything. And I should say, Glenn Greenwald did some good work on this particular case. But ABC never said, you know, never named who the official was. Somebody at a critical time tried to feed that information to ABC, and they were a willing participant in that. And they didn't, Ross is still reporting and so on. He put out this major story at a critical time. That was completely fabricated. We now know, we don't, you know, there's still some controversy as to who the culprit was in the anthrax attacks. The U.S. government, the FBI, says that it was Bruce Ivins, and he committed suicide, so there was never a trial. Other people say, no, it had to have been more people than that. But everybody concedes now that it came from a U.S. or a U.S. allied lab, not from an Iraqi lab. So here you had the skewing of information at a critical time using an anonymous source, that if a media outlet gives the power of anonymity to determine the truth or falsity of a subject at a critical time, it's an incredible power with deep ramifications.
And I'm remembering, just to make sure that we remember some of the more prominent instances of this, I remember John MacArthur. I guess he was the publisher of Harper's at the time. I believe it was he who broke the story about the ambassador, the daughter
That's
of the Kuwaiti
true.
Ambassador.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think of this that story in this context, but you're right. It kind of works because they put this young Kuwaiti girl, really, as a witness to the Iraqis in 1990, going into a Kuwaiti hospital after Iraq invaded Kuwait and taking the babies out of the incubators and throwing them on the floor to die. And Tom Lantos, congressman, had this phony baloney hearing, and he knew that this girl was the Kuwaiti ambassador's daughter, and didn't share that with anybody looking at this. Everybody thought that she was, you know, a witness, and some people questioned her veracity and so on. Nobody other than the insiders and Hill and Knowlton, the public relations firm that organized the whole thing, knew her actual identity. So yes, in a sense, that was, you know, they granted her anonymity. They allowed her, I don't remember her name, but they allowed her to just go by her first name in her testimony, ostensibly because she, you know, feared for a reprisal from her for her family in Kuwait.
What a story, right? Man, all of us Americans imagining these vicious Iraqis who ripped these babies off their incubators and their oxygen and threw them all over the floor. This was one of the stories that preceded us going big time into the first, or was it the second Gulf War? I don't know. We are running out of time. Sam, did you want to talk just a little bit? You've been tracking biowarfare and what's been going on in terms of reporting about biowarfare, U.S. relationship to biowarfare. Where do some of these new diseases come from? Is there a connection that you've been looking at in terms of the new side of this?
Yeah, well, I would say the anthrax attacks are the big connection. You know, they have been completely memory-holed. They were, you know, 9/11 was, you know, a horrific event, but it was a discrete event targeting, you know, two locations, DC and New York. The anthrax attacks really made the fear that the Bush-Cheney administration relied upon a national phenomena, and I think made the U.S. public far more compliant during that period. People may not remember, after the anthrax attacks of 2001, there were a series of media scares that were huge stories at the time, how to seal your windows, that Saddam might put chemical weapons or biological weapons out there. Michael Moore referred to this when he received his Oscar, people might recall, where he referred to, you know, the lies of taped windows and so on. So there are these periodic stories that I feel, that I know the U.S. government uses to instill fear at critical times. I would draw a parallel between the uses of that and the threat levels that the Bush administration, you may remember, code yellow, code orange, code red,
yes,
that they were doing in the years after 9/11. The lingering fear of bioweapons, I think, is where a lot of the establishment is going. I've been tracking, as you know, Dennis, the origins of COVID, I think that a lot of people have made a big mistake by just reflexively taking an anti-Trump, what they think is an anti-Trump position, when in fact COVID could well have come out of a lab. A lot of this stuff is, when you scratch the surface, DOD and USAID, which is the State Department, funded Eco Health Alliance, which funded the Wuhan Institute of Virology, as well as other lab work, dangerous lab work in the United States and elsewhere. Its biggest funders are not the NIH and other scientific things. Its biggest funders are the Pentagon and USAID. And there's a long, you know, people think of biological weapons as a poor man's weapon. It's not true. Okay. They're a rich man's weapon because they have a unique property, which kind of relates to this, at least at a philosophical level. And that,
I'm sorry, Sam, I got to interrupt now because Colonel Ann Wright's going to come on and talk a little bit more about war and peace stuff. But your piece is coming out on what we've been talking about. It's going to be in the Fairness and Accuracy Reporting newsletter. How do people get that?
Well, it's posted right now on my website at Substack.
Okay, so how do people get that?
People just simply go to substack.husseini.com. They can see it, and, you know, the breakdown of things. I even go through I put stuff through archive.org so people can actually see how the AP story tracked and so on at husseini.substack.com. I hope people will take a look at that.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Come back soon. We're going to keep this dialogue going. We appreciate it. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to be joined by Colonel Ann Wright in one moment. Stay with us. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine, and we are happy to have you along with us today. We're also happy to be joined by Colonel Ann Wright, Colonel retired Ann Wright, U.S. Army Colonel retired, resigned from the U.S. State Department in protest of the invasion and politics around Afghanistan. She is a leading member in good standing with Code Pink, and she has been fighting a battle. I get the releases almost every day, Colonel Wright, coming out of the struggle against what's been going on at Red Hill with the Red Hill spill and leftover toxics from many wars past. Welcome back to Flashpoints, Ann Wright. Good to have you with us. And tell people a little bit about this struggle and why. I know there's going to be some actions taking place and some teach-ins taking place over the weekend, coming up this weekend. But tell people about what this is all about.
I surely will, Dennis, and thanks so much for keeping up with us, because for the last year, in fact, this coming weekend is the tragic anniversary of a major jet fuel spill, or spew actually what it was, of jet fuel that is stored in massive tanks that were built into a volcanic wall back in World War II. 20 of these tanks, each one of them 20 stories tall, each one of them can hold 12.5 million gallons of fuel. And right now there are 103 million gallons left in these tanks after they were finally closed in March. The Secretary of Defense, after this spill or spew that was 19,000 gallons of jet fuel that spewed out of some pipes that had been hit by a little trolley thing that they had down in this maze of pipes that is a part of the huge complex for all of these storage tanks and all. This little trolley hit a pipe that had 19,000 gallons of jet fuel in it, and it started spewing, and it ran down a tunnel and went under a door that was supposed to keep any contaminants out of a drinking well that went directly into the big aquifer that services all of Honolulu. So it's been a terrible thing. We've had 93,000 people that were a part of that drinking well complex that have had horrific medical problems from jet fuel poisoning. And that was a year ago that happened. Well, the Navy disputed that there was anything that had happened for at least a week, and people, even though they were smelling gas in their homes, they were seeing sheens of something on their water. Some people continued to drink it, and some of the families didn't have the smell with it. But they, anyway, bottom line was all these families got poisoned. The over Christmas of last year, over 10,000 people had to be housed off the military bases and in hotels in Honolulu. So you can see how massive this problem was. It affected so many people. And over the year, the Navy has come up with various plans of how, well, at first they were refusing to say they were going to close the place down, even though the community had been calling it for the tanks to be closed down for decades, because that was not the first leak. There have been many other leaks. In fact, earlier in 2021, there was a 24,000 gallon leak. It didn't go directly into the water supply. Nobody could actually tell us where it went. But now we're now finding out it's gone into the ground. There are vapors that are coming up from the ground. And, you know, it's a horrific, toxic mess, similar to kind of what now you see on TV about Camp Lejeune, the Marine Corps camp, where after almost 40 years, the U.S. government has said that people that were poisoned by the contaminants that were in the drinking water of Camp Lejeune are going to get, the ones that are still alive are going to get some sort of compensation for it. But bottom line is, you know, people's health has been deeply affected by toxic jet fuel in your water.
It's amazing. You know, they say that the military, the U.S. military, is one of the worst polluter in the world. This is certainly an example of the
way
in which...
Well, it's over and above what we normally think, yeah.
It's so amazing. My partner is from Hawaii. I've spent a bunch of time in the islands. I know how beautiful it is. And, you know, this is a tragic monster under the beauty. I mean, where is the situation right now? There's going to be some actions taking place over the weekend. Are people still getting sick? How do you monitor? How do we know how bad it still is?
Well, people are still getting sick. In fact, there's a Facebook that's called the Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam Water Contamination Facebook, that people are still posting on there that they are still getting sick. And those who have had over a year of this illness, some of them have been able to get compassionate reassignments out of Hawaii to go to places where they don't have vapors in their homes, that they don't have a in and out of these oil sheens that come up on their water. Virtually nobody is drinking the tap water on the Pearl Harbor or Hickam Air Base military housing because it's just the probability that people are going to get more rashes, they're going to get vertigo, they're going to get, you know, there's a whole list of symptoms that people are having. But to get treatment, well, the other thing was the military didn't send in a whole team of toxicologists to start working with people and try to help ameliorate what was going on. So people have had to leave the islands and go to other places on the continent to try to get some sort of treatment for these horrible maladies. And bottom line is that they have been poisoned, and whether or not their bodies will ever be able to throw off all the toxins is still up in the air. So this weekend,
you know,
we're going to have events.
Go on, please. Go on.
We have water donations that those members of in Honolulu that haven't been affected by this. We donate cases of water so that every other weekend we have a water distribution thing for anybody, any families that need more drinking water. We, the rest of the public, are trying to help them out. And then we'll be having events. We're going to have a convoy to go to the Pacific Fleet headquarters, where that's kind of the epicenter of the decision making on what the Navy's going to be doing. We'll have a convoy there to keep putting pressure on them We've been asking for a community forum, and finally the Red Hill Task Force said, yes, we'll create a community platform or forum, but it's not going to be open to the general public. It's not going to be open to the media. So much for transparency. And the people that they picked to be on it, none of them have any experience in this. None of the Sierra Club, none of the Earth Justice, none of those of the Oahu Water Protectors who have been working on this for, well, since the spill on this one, but we've been working on it since 2014 when there was another big spill.
You know, Colonel Wright, I sometimes think about these wars as never-ending silent wars. You know, for instance, the people of Hanford, where the Nagasaki bomb was made, that bomb is still exploding in those communities around where the bomb was built. Here we're talking a devastating situation in which the war continues silently in the bodies of people and in young children who are much more vulnerable to this kind of pollution because their bodies are in the formulative their stages and they're just growing. So, you know, it's sort of like wars that never end. Do you ever see it that way?
Well, you're exactly right. It's a very good description. It's a silent war going on these bodies. And we've had lots of the younger kids that have had to go into emergency rooms. We've had some that have had to have major procedures once they've gotten back to the continent to try to help alleviate some of the issues that their bodies are now having. Not only the young kids, but pets. There have been a rash of pets that died because they're, you know, tiny bodies, and they were actually out in the yards, and there was the grass, you know, all the water that they were putting on the grass and all that stuff had the pollutants in it, and pets were dying. I mean, it's just been a horrific tragedy. And trying to keep the military in line on this thing to try to get them to do what's necessary. I was with a group of four family members who went to Washington 6 weeks ago and talked with 17 different congressional representatives about what they were feeling. And we also had a meeting with the Undersecretary of the Army, the number two civilian of the Army, and the Surgeon General of the Army. One of the women that was with us was an Army major, and she and her family have suffered probably some of the most severe symptoms of toxic poisoning. And talking to those senior leaders of the Army about what had happened to Army personnel that were living on the Navy bases, and they were stunned, even though they'd read stuff in the newspaper, but they had not heard from people that were actually suffering. And I think we're getting a little more support now out of the Army in terms of they're putting pressure on the Navy to do right by people. The VA just today actually announced that they are going to officially start tracking all of the military families or service members, not necessarily the family members, but at least they're starting, here it is 1 year later, they're starting to track all the people that were involved, except the civilians that were involved. Part of this, the drinking water, went over to a former military housing area that is now under private control, leased out to civilians. And they have been left with nobody to help them. So that's another part of this that we're trying to make sure we highlight, is that not only military families have been affected, but civilian families too.
Well, You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Colonel Anne Wright, Colonel retired, and also a prominent member of one of my favorite groups, Code Pink. We're talking about an ongoing struggle, multi-year struggle against the release of terrible toxins in Hawaii. And we're also talking about the profound nature of pollution when we're talking about the military. And again, I say this is, you know, we think about the environment and global warming. We don't always think about the military. And yet I one of the most powerful investigations I saw, I don't remember the name of the scientists now, but they were looking at the ozone layer over Iraq, and they were sort of evaluating the impacts that the war had on the ozone layer and the way in which it was affecting the health of folks in the region and the, you know, outbreaks of cancer. And this, I mean, this goes so many different ways, Colonel, right? It's hard to know where to start.
It's true. And, you know, right now there is the COP27 going on in Egypt. And
right.
For the very first time, COP27 is talking about military emissions. And it's not that every nation has to cough up all the information about how much pollution their militaries emit, but it's the first start in trying to hold accountable militaries all over the world. And the figures that they have say that militaries contribute to 5%, I believe it is, 5% of all emissions, but in specific places, for example, like you mentioned Iraq, and if we just think about what's going on in Ukraine right now with that intense amount of military action that's going on there, I would think the ozone layer above that probably is taking a real hit. And then you look at the burn pits from Afghanistan and Iraq, where now finally the U.S. Congress has authorized the payment to military that were in those areas that are suffering from the effects of inhaling all of the terrible fumes from burning up anything they wanted. It was a garbage pit that they just set on fire, and part of it had fuel in it, some of it had parts of ammunition. You can remember some of them, some of these burn pits exploding because there was actually ordnance and then fuel in those, and then the billowing clouds of carbon that are coming out of that. So the Congress finally has acknowledged this, and the Veterans Administration will have another program similar to like Agent Orange, that military personnel have certain symptoms, then they're going to be accorded the status that it is a presumption that they have been affected by these burn pits, and payments can be made to them. Of course, that doesn't help your actual health, but at least there's an acknowledgement of it now.
Well, what about things like, we know that particularly, you know, during the first Gulf War, second Gulf War, whatever the hell it was called, depleted uranium became a key part of U.S. Fighting vehicles and weaponry. And I know I reported on what was called many different things, but Gulf War syndrome. The fact is that tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of veterans were sick. And I interviewed dozens who talked about how the alarms were going off everywhere in terms of biologics and all the dangerous things. And the soldiers were being told to grin and bear it, that the alarms were all broken, that they were being misled, there's no big deal. Even though I remember a secret report that came out of the military that they were aware that soldiers after the war were going to be gathering souvenirs, which would include depleted uranium that they might be bringing home. You know what I mean? This is so careless in terms of the way in which young people are thrown into the war and then abandoned. And we can see this all over the place. And they're sick from the toxics as well.
Yes, Yeah, it's a leadership tragedy and malfeasance that young soldiers and old soldiers have been put in a position that they've been exposed to depleted uranium. You know, depleted uranium was used in making up tanks, armored vehicles, because it's a much more dense material, and they had all of this depleted uranium that was left over from, I guess it was use. Well, I don't even know where that type of depleted uranium actually was coming from, but the story is that they were using it in order to get rid of it, but it was getting rid of it in vehicles that people were going to be riding around in. And as you mentioned, the souvenirs from war, taking stuff home that you didn't really realize could be causing you and your family health hazards. So the military is a dangerous organization in many ways, and certainly the types of weapons and the residual effects of those weapons on health are one of the things that every young person that is thinking about joining the military needs to be talked to about these sorts of things, so they have a much better understanding of how dangerous the military really is.
Wow. Well, speaking of the military, we just have a couple of minutes left. We have about 8 or 10 minutes left. Can I ask you to just reflect a little bit on how you see what's going on with Ukraine and in the context of this latest sort of, I don't know what you want to call it, this false flag, this misleading story from AP that the Russians had opened fire on Poland. Your thoughts on all of this?
Well, it's the kind of the fog of war that the very first allegations or the very first information that you have about what has happened, who's fired what, it's proving to be that the AP story was exactly, it was wrong. And fortunately, there have been other news agencies and then senior people, for example, out of the NATO forces and all, that have pretty quickly come forward to say that it was not fired by the Russians, but it was a missile that was air defense missile that the Ukrainian government fired in order to try to knock down one of the Russian aircraft or missiles that actually fell in Poland. And it's the whole issue of how much weaponry is being used in by the Ukrainians to try to stop the onslaught of the Russian weapons. It is the fields and the cities of Ukraine are going to be so dangerous for so many years, with all of the amount of ammunition and various kinds of rockets that have been used in that country. You know, there's no justification, in my opinion, for the Russians to have invaded and be doing this, although I understand that they felt they were, pretty well put in the corner in terms of the potential for Ukraine to go into NATO and the fact that the United States and NATO had been having large-scale military exercises right on the border of Russia for several years. And even though President Putin had been warning in strong terms, you've got to back off on this stuff because this is, you're threatening our Russian national security by what you're doing. All that said, it's no justification for what's going on right now. So, the position of many of us in the peace community is that negotiations have to begin. I mean, for the people of Ukraine to save lives, to save the undamaged part of the infrastructure. I mean, if there's no negotiations, no ceasefire, no negotiations, I mean, this could just go on for years longer and just pulverize Ukraine. So we're calling for ceasefire and negotiations, and You know, there are demonstrations here and there, mostly in Europe. We haven't had any major demonstrations here in the United States, sadly to say. In individual towns and cities, there may be some small ones, but not like on the scale that we've seen in some of the European capitals. But trying to put pressure on our own Congress to say to the administration, in the need for a ceasefire and negotiation is critical. And then when you look at how much this is benefiting the weapons or the merchants of death, the weapons dealers who are selling to the United States to backfill all of the weapons that the U.S. has given to Ukraine, backfilling them, they're making a killing off this. And then there's a section in the new National Defense Authorization Act that authorizes almost unlimited amount of weapons to be manufactured and purchased by the United States, much more than just backfilling what we've given to Ukraine, but by, in some instances, various types of weapons are being will be authorized if this bill passes, up to a thousand times more than what we have right now, which is just outrageous. You know, we've got the largest military budget we've ever had, over $880 billion. And to think all of the weapons manufacturers that are just have Cheshire cat grins on their faces because they too, as oil companies, have made the biggest profits they've ever had in a three-week period, just these last, or three-month period, in these last months. The weapon manufacturers are making a killing out of this also.
They sure are. Now, back to this false story. They credit it to, the anonymous story is a high Defense Department official. That's who they credit with the story, a high Defense Department official. How many different ways could this high Defense Department official be compromised? Why would he want to mislead the world into a potential conflagration, maybe nuclear conflagration? Will you think he's going to, his job is in jeopardy, or he was doing what he was told? He was going to be the leaker to play this one way as they played the story another way as well. How do you see that?
Well, it can be seen a variety of ways. It may have been that's the information that they had at the Pentagon, that something had been, you know, something fell in Poland, and the probability is that it was a Russian missile. That, you know, that's one of it. That, but it all goes back to the point of you really should not be making these allegations at all until, you know, you find out for sure what happened, and leaking it and then getting a big story in AP that turned out to be totally wrong. I would hope that it's not some, you know, some high military person that's saying we're going to really go after the Russians again on this. But, you know, the media coverage of the war on Ukraine has certainly been totally slanted on the Ukrainian side, and the, you know, the media going after the Russians on everything. I mean, and certainly there's a good reason for part of it, but to jeopardize even further the security of the region and potentially incite something else to happen is a horribly dangerous thing for the situation in Ukraine and around the world. You know, you just never can tell when something may happen that, based on inaccurate, wrong information, that can just reignite or ignite something that you can't back out from. So it's, I would hope that it was an honest mistake, but you just never can tell.
You never can tell. I want to thank you very much, Colonel Anne Wright, retired, for all the incredible information you provide us with and the work, the courageous work you do with Code Pink over the years. We really appreciate that, hoping that you will keep us posted as you, I'm sure you're going to be continuing the battle there in Hawaii against the polluters. And maybe you want to let people again know what's happening. Maybe people can follow it on the web, or maybe they're listening. We're all over the world. Maybe they're listening from Hawaii. The details, if people want to be a part of what's happening this weekend around the resistance at Red Hill.
Well, you can, if you go on Instagram and Oahu Water Protectors, we have a series of flyers of all of the events that we'll be having this weekend. And that Instagram account, and plus the Facebook for Oahu Water Protectors, and also Sierra Club Hawaii. Those two groups are the main ones where you can keep track of what's going on.
Beautiful. Thank you for joining us on Flashpoints tonight.
It's a real pleasure, Dennis. Keep up the great work. We really appreciate all you do investigating what's going on in our world. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And that does it for us for tonight. Stay tuned.
That wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934.